Welcome back to Dakota Midday and South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. Although little remembered today, Whitney Young was one of the key figures of the civil rights movement. As the executive director of the National Urban League, he found allies in business and government, advising Presidents Kennedy, Johnson, and Nixon. He helped break down the doors of corporate America by making the argument that segregation was good for business. A new documentary, The Power Broker, follows Young from the streets of Harlem to the boardrooms of Fortune 500 companies and the Oval Office. The Power Broker airs next Monday on SDPB-TV. The film's executive director is Bonnie Boswell. She's a reporter, producer, commentator, and talk show host. She's also the niece of Whitney Young, and she joins us now. Bonnie Boswell, thanks so much for taking the time to join us on Dakota Midday.
Delighted to be here.
Well, to begin with, why did you want to produce a documentary about Whitney Young?
Well, I thought that Whitney Young, my uncle's relevance today was just so obvious because he was a man who was able to build bridges between disparate groups. He, at the time, you know, was really focused on building those bridges between black and white at a very volatile time in American history, but also rich and poor. And as I looked around the country and the kinds of issues that we have today, they seem very similar. And I thought, you know, we should really look at role models like this who don't always get the headlines, who may be working behind the scenes, but these are the kind of heroes that we still need today.
Well, take us back to the 1960s. What was Whitney Young's role as the leader or as one of the leaders of the civil rights movement?
Well, as you mentioned before, his focus was really about the mission of the National Urban League, which was to try to bring jobs, housing, education to disenfranchised people. After the Brown v. Board of Education decision, of course, there was a lot of emphasis on raising the legal barriers. But, you know, Uncle Whitney really felt that it's one thing to say that you have the right to live in any community, but you also have to have the means to do so. So he really wanted to see how to go about really, and particularly given his background as a social worker, how you provide the means for people to get the jobs that will enable them to get the money to live wherever they live and so wherever they want to live. So I think it was a multi-purpose approach to providing a better way of life for people.
Were the white corporate leaders open to meeting with him, and did it take much persuading for them to start to create more opportunities for African Americans?
Yeah, it was not an easy journey. I mean, at that time, many of the people in corporate America had not interacted with African Americans as peers, as people who they would consider to be a part of their business. They had a mindset that maybe African Americans could be great sports heroes or entertainers or helpers in your house, but, you know, to be able to really have them be on par as a peer was a new concept. And so, you know, I remember Uncle Whitney would say to the people that he was meeting in corporate America, he said, "We need the Jackie Robinsons of industry." And he also said that we also need the Branch Rickeys of industry as well. So he was really calling on them to open up their minds and their hearts to understand that in order to have a really vital culture, we needed to open up the doors to everybody. And so, you know, he was advocating for minorities, but of course that led in the opportunity for women and people with all kinds of differences from what was going on in the 50s.
Are you old enough to have known Whitney Young very well?
I did know him. Of course, he was a busy man and running around doing what he was doing, and I was busy growing up, but our family was very close. We used to meet at my grandparents' house in Kentucky for a lot of family gatherings, holidays, weddings, things like that. And he was always reaching out to me. My grandparents were very mindful of the importance of family relationships, so we all wrote cards, and he wrote me a card. I remember in the 70s when he was doing many things, but I had gone to Africa, and he said in this card that I have, which I know he must have picked out himself because no assistant would have picked it out. It was clearly a card for a five-year-old. But he said, if I was in Africa, and he said, "If you don't meet a chief to marry, hurry home." So, you know, he was always reaching out, which I really appreciated.
Well, you mentioned your grandfather, Whitney Young's father. He was president of an all-black boarding school, the Lincoln Institute, which the documentary describes as an oasis from the segregated world. What role did this background play in the development of Whitney Young's character and personality?
I think it played a really huge development in his character because he observed his father having to negotiate a very difficult situation. Lincoln Institute had been set up as a result of a landmark Supreme Court decision forcing segregation in private schools. And this decision went along with the Jim Crow laws in 1904. So the community surrounding this all-black school was very hostile, and the benefactors were all white. So my grandfather had to figure out a very shrewd strategy for being able to educate African Americans fully beyond just servitude, and yet still getting the support of the white community. So one of the things my grandfather did was when the kids were in school learning reading, writing, arithmetic, if the white trustees were coming to campus, he would have them all go out to either the fields if they were boys or into the home economics classes if they were girls. And, you know, the white trustees could say, oh, this is a great education. But, of course, you know, it was only in part for appearances. So I think the bottom line is that one thing he really taught my uncle was pragmatism. And he said to him at an early age, he said to Whitney, he said, don't get mad, get smart. He also said, never let anyone drag you so low as to hate them. So I think he gave him a perspective to be calm in the middle of a storm and to have a big goal in mind.
You're listening to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting, and we're talking with Bonnie Boswell. She's the niece of Whitney Young. She's also the executive producer of the new documentary, The Power Broker, which is all about Whitney Young, and that airs next Monday on SDPB TV. The documentary touches on Whitney Young's time in the Army during World War II, and this was the time when he really found out that he had skills as a mediator, that he could bring two different groups together and talk.
Exactly. This was, as you mentioned, it was a time when there was a segregated army in America, which is hard for me to imagine. But anyway, that's what the situation was. And the African-American enlisted men were being treated differently by their officers, the white officers. And but this time, of course, the guys had guns. And so at night, sometimes they would shoot in the direction of the white officers, which, of course, made to a very tense situation. So the officers appealed to Whitney Young and said, you know, we need help here. And so Whitney Young was able to negotiate between the two groups, and he won all kinds of advantages for the men to really be treated as equals. And so he began to reflect on his ability to do this, and I think obviously enjoyed being able to create peace in a difficult situation. So he wrote to his wife, Margaret Buckner, that he thought he'd found his life's work.
And how did that help him then in the 1960s during the Civil Rights Movement when he was meeting and negotiating with LBJ during Johnson's administration?
Well, I think the idea was that always that, you know, Whitney Young said that my goal is to help America live up to her ideals. And so he knew he had to continually relate to his base, people who were disenfranchised, the African-American community, and the Maine at that point, and at the same time, you know, really be able to talk directly to the people who had power. So he was between these two worlds, and it was very uncomfortable for him sometimes. It was very difficult. It was very challenging because, you know, people on both sides didn't always know what he was doing or how he was doing it, but he came up with results. So his posture was, you know, it doesn't matter if I'm popular or not. He said, I want people to think that I've been effective. So his eye, again, was on the goal of accomplishing things, and this is what he was able to really do in terms of Lyndon Johnson. The two of them were able to form a bond about getting things done through civil rights legislation that would move the ball forward in terms of race relations, but also in terms of creating a more equitable society. Again, it was not simply about race, although I think it's been interpreted like that. But the goal for all of the people who were involved in the movement at that point was to create a better America for every person. And that, in fact, is what has happened.
And that's part of why he came up with what he called the Domestic Marshall Plan?
Exactly, exactly. The Marshall Plan, as you know, was an effort to revitalize Western Europe after the war. And so that concept had already been a part of the American ideology that this was something that was good to do and was okay to do. But a similar program had never been put in place for African Americans who had, in fact, of course, endured slavery as well as segregation. So his point was, if we can do this for Western Europe, we can do it at home. So that's why he put the idea of domestic in front of a concept that people had already bought into, but he made sure that it was focused on the domestic situation. So I thought this was a smart concept. And in fact, in our film, you can see there's a picture of Germany and there's a picture of Chicago next to each other, and they look very much the same. And his point was, you know, we should be able to take care of our own in the same kind of way.
And the domestic Marshall Plan, some of the elements of that became Johnson's Great Society?
Exactly. So, you know, again, Whitney Young was a social worker, so he was concerned and interested in things like how to create better health care. So Medicaid, Medicare came out of that concept. How to have better jobs. So Job Corps came out of that concept. Better education, Head Start became a part of that project. So, you know, many of these concepts, as you look through some of the letters, as I've done at Columbia, between Johnson or Humphrey, who was vice president at the time, and Whitney Young, there's a lot of going back and forth of, I need your help with this. We're really looking forward to your support on this. We need your ideas. And so he really did help frame a lot of what we now know as the war on poverty, but whose programs have really become largely part of the fabric of what we've come to accept here in America.
You mentioned Whitney Young's pragmatism and his what you call in the documentary, The Power Broker, Young's mediated calm. Now, this put him in a tough position later in the 60s with the young black activists who didn't like that approach.
Well, exactly. You know, it was an extremely tense time. There was a lot of emotion, as you can imagine. I mean, you can think of coming off of, you know, Bloody Sunday, you know, and, you know, all the violence that people were witnessing, you know, across the South. And so emotions were really high. And the young people had gotten tired of a approach that was calm. And so there was a lot of resistance to what was called moderate leaders or establishment leaders. And, you know, it was a very, very tense time. If you were seen talking to a white person, if you were black at that point, you could be considered suspect or a traitor. So it was a very, very touchy situation. On the other hand, again, remember Whitney Young had been a dean of students, had grown up the son of an educator, and so he had a lot of rapport and feeling for young people. And so even though he got criticism from them, a lot of times he'd go put those very same people on his board. He went into one of my favorite stories is about him going to Morehouse College, where there were a lot of people waiting for him and were booing him. He was going to make a speech, and during the middle of the speech, you know, they were catcalling, booing, and so on. And but he just kept talking to them. He just kept talking, you know, we have different approaches, but our goal is the same, and, you know, that kind of thing, and really just trying to give them, you know, the broad picture from his perspective. And what was interesting is that by the end of that speech, those people who had been booing gave him a standing ovation. I think that this is really kind of the testament of his character, that he had that kind of determination. And again, that's why I really wanted to do this film, because I think it's important to be able to build bridges. When we see so much, you know, discord, you know, to having the confidence and the courage to keep going and have dialogue is really critical.
We only have a couple of minutes left, but I'm wondering why you think that Whitney Young isn't as well remembered today as some of the other civil rights leaders of the 1960s.
Well, I think one main reason was his role. He did a lot of his talking behind the scenes in corporate boardrooms or, you know, one-on-one conversations. And I think that's effective because, you know, if you're making a speech to a lot of people, you're often playing to your audience, of course. You want, you know, their approval and so on and so forth. So, you know, his whole arena was very different. You know, he wanted to move the ball further down the court in terms of, you know, moving race relations and opportunity for jobs and so on and so forth with people who were in power and who, you know, he had to help convince that it was good for them to open up their life and to think more broadly. So he was behind the scenes. He often wasn't the most vocal person. And, you know, look at the media, how the media functions then as today. The people who get the most headlines tend to be those who make the loudest noise. And so the subtleties and nuances of how things get done don't often get portrayed. But again, I think it's really important moving forward that we lift up this kind of image, because it's often in the nuances that things happen, and we need the shades of gray to really advance ourselves.
Bonnie Boswell is the executive director of a new documentary about her uncle and civil rights leader, Whitney Young. It's called The Power Broker, Whitney Young's Fight for Civil Rights. It airs next Monday evening on SDPB-TV at 9 Central 8 Mountain. Bonnie Boswell, thanks so much for taking the time to join us on Dakota Midday.
Thank you so much.
For a full schedule on the airings of The Power Broker, you can visit sdpb.org. And that's it for this edition of Dakota Midday. We've been broadcasting live from the U.S. Geological Survey's Aeros Center near Sioux Falls. Thanks to Aeros for hosting us today. Also, thanks to our guests, and thanks to Steve Munson, our on-site engineer. Stephen Zwemke produced the program from Vermilion. We had assistance from Nathan Poole. Special thanks to Kara Hetland. Coming up on tomorrow's Dakota Midday, we'll hear about Frontline's behind-the-scenes documentary of the budget negotiations. It's called Cliffhanger. You can hear more about that tomorrow at noon Central, 11 Mountain, on Dakota Midday.